session number 10688, Reel 1.
Mr. Kitson, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your family background to start off with, where you come from and so on?
I came originally from Glasgow. My parents were Yorkshire people who came to Glasgow and set up a business there. I was born in Glasgow. But when I was 7 or 8, we moved to Dumfriesshire because of the educational situation in Scotland. The system there was that if you lived in a particular parish, you could go to a particular school. The education was free, of course. And my parents wanted me to go to a school in Dumfriesshire, and so we moved lock, stock and barrel and lived in this particular parish, which allowed me to go to that school. When I was old enough to start grammar school education, we then moved back to Hamilton, just outside Glasgow, because I wanted to go to Hamilton Academy. And because we lived in the parish there, I could go to Hamilton Academy. And I stayed there and until I was able then to go to a technical college where I studied as a draftsman.
How did you come to be in the forces then?
Well, in 1936, the first thing I saw an advertisement for the Palestine Police. And I applied for that. I thought, you know, it'd be a nice thing to go to Palestine, not knowing any better. And came down to Millbank and had an interview and was accepted. And went with, I think there's 20 of us sailed in either the end of December or beginning of January 1937. And we went, of course, to Mount Scopus in Jerusalem to do our 3 months basic training, which later, when the war came along, I found invaluable, because I think probably the training in the Palestine Police was better training even than in the army.
Why was it so good?
They had the drill instructors and people like that were all ex-guards, drill sergeants. And from the time we got there until the time we left the depot, it really was like being in a concentration camp. Enjoyable, but you never stopped from dawn till dusk. You were out doing PT at 6:30 in the morning, and then drill, and then more PT and more drill, weapon training. And in the afternoons, you were given lectures on law. And you also attended a class every day on colloquial Arabic. So you didn't have a minute to spare. If you did have a minute to spare, you were cleaning uniform, polishing boots and doing that sort of thing. So that when you finished your 3 months training, you were hard as iron, you were fit as a fiddle. Far superior to the training I've ever found in the army. Because the recruits in the army do get a bit of spare time to themselves, but we didn't. But we thoroughly enjoyed it. Sport was compulsory. There's no question about not playing sport. I was a rugby player, and they asked you, of course, which sports you played, and when I said rugby, they said, you're in the team. And there was no grass there. You played on cinders, which was pretty desperate, because if you play rugby, you don't tackle people around the neck, you tackle low. But in Palestine, you couldn't do that, because you ripped your legs to pieces if you did that. Also, I didn't play football and didn't like football, but I had to play football. I'd never boxed, but I had to box, which I didn't like very much. Cross-country running, things like that. So that you were very, very fit when you... Before I went there, I'd been a member of Shettleston Harriers in Glasgow. And I'd been a cross-country runner, running sometimes up to 26 miles. But there, in training, you'd go out 3 nights a week and run 7 miles, and then once a month you'd go in for a cross-country race, a long-distance race. My mother, unfortunately, died when I was about 18, and I went to live with an aunt. And I suppose that when I saw the advertisement for the Palestine Police, I was not that happy living with the aunt, and it was a way of getting out, getting away somewhere and doing something. But of course, in Palestine, I enjoyed every minute of it there.
Did the Palestine Police carry arms at that time?
Oh, yes, yes, oh, yes.
What kind of arms?
Well, I was trained as a Lewis gunner, if you've ever heard of a Lewis gun. And also trained in, with a an SMLE rifle, and a 4.5 revolver and a 3.8 revolver. Oh, yes, we carried arms.
Were the police happy about carrying arms?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you couldn't have done the job without arms. You never moved without... if you were off duty, you still carried a revolver. You never moved without a firearm.
What briefing did you get about when you got to Palestine about the relationship which a policeman ought to have with civilians in Palestine?
Well, as I recall, not a lot. Except the basic things that are taught to all policemen, I suppose, in this country as well, about your attitude towards people, being polite, trying to help people. But no, nothing in depth. Nothing in depth. I think the instructions we got were quite adequate. The biggest problem, of course, was the difference in language. Even with colloquial Arabic, you could talk to an Arab, and you could imagine that he was being aggressive, and he wasn't being aggressive at all. But with experience, you realised that. But at first, you didn't realise that.
Just from his manner.
That's from his manner, the way he moved his hands and his arms, and the intonation in his voice. And that created problems sometimes. Quite reasonable, decent Arabs, you get a little bit upset with them because you thought they were being aggressive to you. Because in the urban districts, the relationship between the police and the Arabs was quite friendly when I went out there. Nevertheless, you could get this situation arise where you thought they were being aggressive.
Just through a misunderstanding?
That's all. I never... studied Hebrew much because I just couldn't get it. I just couldn't study Hebrew because at the end of our training we could go to classes in Hebrew, and after we left training we could take classes in Hebrew. But I just couldn't get it at all. The Arabic I could, because Scotsmen seemed to be able to learn Arabic quicker than anybody else, and the Arabic intonations in their voice, and it's very similar to broad Scots accent. The pronunciation of letters like R are very similar, and it's a simple language. I can't speak any of it now, but I found that was too difficult. And in time, I got to know quite a few Arabs and visited them in their houses and that sort of thing. Also, English-speaking Arabs, but nevertheless. Were quite happy to speak to me in Arabic because it was helped me with my colloquial Arabic, you see.
In what way did you make your Arabic friends?
Well, it was most peculiar. The first family I got to know was a family called Boutadji. Boutadji was a Christian Arab, and he ran he was a firearms dealer. Most peculiar sort of thing in Palestine. And there had been some queries about his method of bookkeeping. And I knew nothing about bookkeeping or anything like that. And I was suddenly told to go to this shop and examine his books. And I spent nearly a fortnight there to make sure that his income and firearms and outgoing... He didn't sell rifles, he sold sporting guns and shotguns and stuff like that. And I found everything was all right, and did my reports and so on. But after I'd finished this thing, he invited me to his house, and he lived... I was in Haifa at that time, and he lived outside Haifa at a place called Bat Galim. And I was invited to lunch one Sunday, And he lived in a very big house with a swimming pool and a tennis court. His family had all been educated at the American University at Beirut. And I went there quite frequently. And one or two more of us went there, because he'd said to me at some time, if any of your friends would like to come play tennis or have a swim on a Sunday, bring them along. So we sort of were pleased to go there because they welcomed us. And they're nice people. I liked Arabs. They're very nice people. And that's how... Then I met a chap who... he wasn't an Arab. He was an Englishman. And he'd left the army and he'd got a job with the company that ran buses through to Transjordan. And he was married to an Arab woman. And I visited their house quite frequently. And in the meantime, of course, I met other Arabs who came to Bitaji's house and that sort of thing, you see. I didn't visit any of their houses. But I met them in his house, you know, and we would have dinner at night with them or lunch in the, at midday and so on.
Did Bitaji or any of your other Arab friends pass any comments on what they thought about the British presence in Palestine?
No, I don't remember anybody passing a comment about us being there. The relationship between them and the British was very good. Whether that was because they were Christian Arabs, or not, I don't know. I didn't have a lot to do with Muslim Arabs, because they lived in their own areas. They were never happy with us, but I fully understood why they weren't happy with us. And as time went on in Palestine, I realised that why they were unhappy, and in fact, I sympathised with them for their attitude, because I've never considered them to be terrorists. I've considered the Palestinians. Terrorism is a word that we use for all sorts of people that shoot at you. Don't agree with you. Now, they didn't agree with us. Of course they didn't. We never got involved in politics or anything like that. But as time went on, I personally felt a lot of sympathy towards them because it was their country. Now, I'm not anti-Semitic by any manner of means, because I have a lot of Jewish friends, and I had friends out there who were Jewish. And it wasn't their fault the situation had arisen. But when I went out there, mainly the Jews that were in Palestine were concentrated in the outskirts of Jerusalem. They were religious people. But the Jewish colonies were starting up then, and the immigrants were coming in. Now, the land that was they were using was being bought from what I would call absentee landlords. And the Palestinians who worked the land were tenants. But when the land was sold to the Jews, they had to leave. And unfortunately, it was part of our job to make sure they did leave. And that's a job I didn't like. I didn't argue with it. That was my job to do that. But it wasn't a pleasant job. And there was no arrangements made for them to go anywhere. They were just moved off the land. And in fact, at that time, they were, I suppose, the first refugees. But as time went on, even in the short time I was there, more and more immigrants came. And more land was bought, and more Palestinians were evicted from the land. And right up in places like Nablus and Jenin, where there's never been any Jews, suddenly Jewish colonies were springing up. I think this had an effect, apart from the fact I knew the war was going to start, and I didn't want to be there when the war started. This had some effect on me coming back.
We'll come on later to how you came back, but what would happen when you went to evict somebody? Would there be any physical resistance?
No. This was this. All, if there had been some physical resistance, I might not have been so worried about it. But they were too, they were very passive. These people. They were very simple. They're very simple people. Eking out a living. They're a bit lazy, mind you. The women did a lot of the work, but they were quite passive. The ones I came across.
Why was it so upsetting?
Well, if you put yourself in the same situation in your own country, if somebody, for example, came and bought up all this land here, who came from another country, and the police arrived and said, sorry, but you must leave. It didn't seem right to me that this, but of course I would never comment on that there, because I was paid to do that particular job.
But were they weeping or showing signs?
No. Generally, when you got to an area or a village, they had been told before we arrived that they had to go, and most of them, in the meantime, had gone, because they knew that if they didn't go quietly, they would be taken away. But I never came across a situation where we had to physically manhandle anybody. We had to manhandle people in other circumstances, searching villages and so on, but not in that respect. I'm not too sure whether I was a bit soft or not. I don't think I am, but I think I'm fair, you know. And I compared it with what could have happened to me.
How did you make your Jewish friends?
Well, the Jewish friends I got to know, I met them mainly because they were in the Palestine police. Because we had, strictly speaking, there was the Palestine police, which was composed of Jewish constables and Arab constables, and the Palestine police British section. But we all worked together. When we went on patrol, you would go out. If you were on foot patrol, you would go out with an Arab constable or a Jewish constable. The ranks also, we had Jewish and Arab superintendents, and a lot of them were in the CID, in higher ranks than we were, but they didn't command us. But we worked very well with these people, and the first time I got to know a Jew in Palestine was a young German whose parents had come there from Germany. They'd been able to get out of Germany several years before I got there, and he'd joined the Palestine police. A very smart young man he was. He spoke Arabic and English. And he lived at a place called Hadara Carmel, which was overlooked Haifa. And he invited me to his parents' home. And that began a friendship with that family. And I was always welcomed there. And they were very hospitable people. And in fact, I was quite pleased on one occasion when I was invited there at one of their holy days. I'm not sure whether it was Yom Kippur or which one it was. But I think it's a day when Gentiles wouldn't normally be accepted into their homes. So these people I got on well with, and I think they got on well with me. But we didn't ever talk politics. That wasn't anything to do with me, politics.
How did the Jews and the Arabs and the Palestine police get on with each other?
Very well. Very well. They would patrol together. They formed crews on vehicles. If you on escort jobs and things like that, sometimes you went out with to escort the district commissioner. You'd have a mixed crew with you. You'd have a Palestinian driver. He could be a Jew or an Arab, and you'd probably have a sergeant in the front. And on the back of the pickup, you'd have your Lewis gunner and two riflemen. And there was no question about we must have Jews, we must have Arabs, we must have British. It was, as far as I was concerned, I got on extremely well with all of them.
Did any civilians at any time, either Arab or Jews, ever show any hostility verbally or in any other way towards you because you were a British person in Palestine? Did they ever say to you, why don't you leave this country?
Not individuals. But we had riots and demonstrations from time to time, and of course we got a lot of abuse then. But that, of course, was anticipated. We had a military tribunal which condemned a Palestinian to death for being in possession of a firearm, and he was hanged. And there was a terrific riot then in Kingsway in Haifa. And when that happened, of course, you got a tremendous amount of abuse. But like any other, like in this country, when there's a demonstration and it gets out of hand, the police in this country are abused. They were very accurate with their stone throwing. They used road metal, and they were very accurate with that. We wore a shield on our left arm to put up in front of our face. But it was, when you had to lower the shield, they would then there'd be a fusillade of stones. Quite a lot of injuries. Our superintendent was hit in the eye and lost his eye in one demonstration in Kingsway. When the demonstration subsided, it seemed to get back to quite normal day-to-day living again. The shops opened up again, Arab shops, you know, and the Jewish shops opened up again, and everything seemed to be back to normal.
What kind of abuse would they shout, though?
Well, they shouted abuse in their own language, of course. But we were British pigs and English pigs and things like that. But pigs are a word that's used all over the world for policemen. These things don't annoy you or anything like that.
So you only had to deal with Arab riots, did you, in Palestine? Never Jewish riots?
Not Jewish riots, no.
Now, you were talking about having to search villages. What were the circumstances under which that occurred?
Well, you would suddenly be called out, no matter what your duties were, you would suddenly be called out and put on transport, and the army would be involved. And you go to a village, and the army would surround the village. And the reason for that was always given, that you were looking for a terrorist. Now, the so-called terrorists, we had photographs of most of them. Now, there was one very well-known terrorist called Fawji al-Khawaji. His photograph was circulated to all of us, and we had a list of names. But we go to the village ostensibly to look for a particular terrorist, and all the males in the village were brought out, and they were formed up in rows, and they were squatted down, and then they were interrogated. That was one of my jobs, to interrogate them or anything like that. There were certain people who did the interrogations. And then you would see that certain Arabs, Palestinians, were taken out of this row and put on a vehicle and taken away for further interrogation. but it got to a stage when the so-called terrorism became critical. And in order to fight terrorism, we became terrorists, more or less.
In what way?
Well, searching villages, for example, it was never a gentle business. Afterwards, the villagers would complain that the British police and the British troops had ransacked their house and destroyed things. And some people poo-pooed that, but it was quite right. The men that were carrying out these searches were men who were being subjected to attacks by the so-called terrorists. They were being shot at, and their vehicles were being bombed, and they were frustrated because of all this. It wasn't their job to take any action like that, but it's very difficult for people who are being attacked not to retaliate in some way, and they did retaliate. And this a minor sort of thing. I mean, we didn't go about shooting people or anything like that, but we did certainly mess villages up. And of course, that created a tremendous lot of antagonism amongst the people in the countryside. You know, the peasants. But that's the sort of thing that happens, I suppose.
What and kind of damage was done?
Furniture was broken. Drawers were pulled out. Articles, for example, in that cabinet there, that would be opened and stuff thrown on the floor. I've never seen it happen, but I've heard of troops taking all the foodstuffs, mixed millet and various kinds of food, and throwing it all in a pile, mixing it all up, so you couldn't use it then. And then we went to villages where they had to pay a communal fine, for example, and their cattle would be taken away. And in order to get their cattle back, they would have to pay so much per head of cattle to get it back. Now, they didn't have a lot of money, these people, and sometimes they couldn't do it, in which case the cattle were sold and to raise the fine, you see. I think in the day-to-day work, we didn't lose any sleep over these things. But I think after a while, in the back of your mind, you begin to think to yourself, what's this all about? Because when the Jewish colonies were being formed, we supplied them with arms to defend themselves. And we taught them how to use the arms. We didn't give the Arabs any arms. And when the Ergun had started before I went there, in the Stern Gang. Apart from arms they got somewhere else, they were able, as far as I could see, to use arms which had been supplied to the Jewish people for their own defence. So we were actually assisting a terrorist organisation, because Ergun was terrorist, no doubt, and the Stern Gang, of course, was quite beyond the pale. They were evil murderers. They killed for the sake of killing and the joy of killing. Men, women, children, anything, anybody. And you see, people like Moshe Dayan, who was a hero in Palestine, was a member of the Stern Gang. And finally was commander-in-chief of the Israeli forces in the Seven-Year War, at 7 Days War, and that sort of thing.